Lakota. We are in our April COVID community forum to discuss vaccines, including rollout, efficacy, timeline to normalcy, the summer outlook, and of course, today's biggest news, the Johnson & Johnson changes and pause of administration there. So today we have Public Health Director Grace Franklin and Chief Medical Officer Dr. Sharon Grundy on the call, and we will go ahead and get started. As a quick reminder, if you do have questions as we get going here, you can raise your hand with the raise hand option in the reactions section of Zoom. If you are on the phone, you can hit *9. And alternatively, if you need to ask us a question and you're not on site today on Zoom, you can email us at publichealth@sanmiguelcountycode.gov. If you know anyone in the waiting room that doesn't have their name as their identifier, please don't hesitate to let them know. We need first and last name in order to admit people for safety purposes. Thank you very much. Grace, take it away.
Great, thanks. And so as Lindsay mentioned, this is a bit of a catch-all topic, but I think it's because there's been so much going on recently, we want to make sure folks are up to date and have the best information available. So Lindsay, if you can go to the next slide. Great. So just to level set real quick, a few weeks ago, the CDC came out with updated information from deaths, cause of deaths from 2020, and COVID-19 fell as the third leading cause of death within the United States. And this is for deaths attributed to the COVID being the main cause, not an underlying cause. It falls right behind heart disease and cancer. So I really just want to reiterate that this virus is really horrible, extremely transmissible, and something that has really caused such large policy shifts and changes in our behavior for a reason, because of the excess deaths that have occurred. Next slide, please. And then I know Dr. Grundy has a little bit of bad internet right now, so I might tag her in, but we'll see if it works. Within San Miguel County, as you can see on here, this is our county COVID dashboard, and we've had almost 900 cases, a little over 850, and currently have 7 active local cases that tested positive and are currently in their contagion period. When you look at the top right-hand side here with the active, with the local cases and a 7-day average, you can see over the winter, we definitely saw the most significant uptake in cases, and we've really petered off to a steady lower case number overall. Next slide. And so we've been really fortunate here in our county with really amazing community engagement and folks really taking to heart the 5 commitments. And really, to get back to normal, it's going to take all of our tools. So not only the 5 commitments of wearing a mask, 6-foot distancing, and good hygiene, but this next step is vaccines and making sure we can have a safe way for the general population to gain immunity to this virus. Next slide. So I see Dr. Grundy got kicked off, so I'll do this slide. And if we all have questions about the efficacy, answering it after the fact. But vaccines, typically they take a lot of time to develop. With the COVID-19 vaccines, all of them went through the Federal Drug and Administration approval process in the same manner that any other vaccine does. And it goes through these major phases, which are listed to the left. So we have our preclinical trials, where we have a lot of research and then small-scale studies to really understand what's going on, how can we use the science to develop these vaccines, which then it goes into clinical trials, where it's 3 different phases of people who are given the vaccine and other groups are given the placebo. And in phase one, it's a really small group, usually less than 80 people, to see if there's any adverse reactions that are fairly prevalent. In phase two, it bumps up to a couple hundred. And then phase three goes to that larger group of thousands of folks that get part of the trial to see what are those, what's the safety and efficacy, how well does this vaccine work. Once the vaccine is approved through the FDA, right now with COVID-19 vaccines, they've all been approved through emergency use authorization. They are all given a independent review board called the ACIP that looks at the research, looks at the clinical trials, and provides recommendations about the vaccine, how it should be administered, and what the phased rollout should be. And now we're in this distribution phase, right, where manufacturers are making and distributing in large quantities these vaccines. But at the same time, the FDA and the CDC continue to monitor for safety and efficacy of the vaccines and utilizes several different checkpoints to really get a better sense of what's going on and if there are any rare side effects that we weren't anticipating. And so we'll talk a little bit about that in the next slide. But before we do too, part of this approval process, we recognize that the rollout of the vaccine, we had limited supplies early on. And so the ACIP, that independent review board, made recommendations about the way to maximize the rollout of the vaccine to those that are most vulnerable and those that are most exposed, which started with people ages 70 and above and our healthcare workers. And then the state of Colorado has been working through different phases to open up vaccine eligibility to those along the spectrum of eligibility to maximize our vaccine rollout. And so as of, I think, April 5th, the state of Colorado, we have removed the phased eligibility, and anybody 16 or older is able to receive the Pfizer vaccine, and all Coloradans 18 and older are able to receive the Moderna or Janssen vaccine. And the Moderna and Janssen are the two that we have in our county. Next slide. Okay. And so Dr. Grundy, I think I'm gonna tag you in here to talk a little bit about the Johnson & Johnson or Janssen vaccine and the safety precautions that are taking place right now.
So, hi there, everybody. Good to be speaking with you all tonight. So this morning, the CDC released that the Johnson & Johnson was going to be placed on pause. They had noted through the tracking system that's been in place since the start of initiating COVID-19 vaccines that six women in particular developed a rare rare type of blood clots anywhere from 6 to 13 days after receiving the Johnson & Johnson or the Janssen vaccine. And so they wanted to halt the Johnson & Johnson vaccine distribution until they could investigate this further. So the ACIP meets tomorrow to review the data. And this is kind of a rare type of clotting disorder that's occurring in these six people. So they don't quite know yet if it's related to the vaccine or not, but it is an immune type clotting disorder that's occurring somewhere within kind of 2 weeks after a vaccination. Women in particular, women under the age of 50. So they'll be reviewing that. We this would be a very rare effect. There's been over kind of 6 million to 7 million vaccines of the Johnson & Johnson type that have been distributed. So six people being reported. So they want to have that abundance of caution, and they want to kind of slow down and see what the data is showing and make sure that the safety of this vaccine is there. It's, again, considered a rare side effect. So they're looking for people, if you did have the Johnson & Johnson or the Janssen vaccine, recently in the last 2 weeks, and you did develop a new onset type headache, severe abdominal pain, leg pain, or shortness of breath. Up to 3 weeks after getting your shot, we would want you kind of contacting your healthcare provider to review those symptoms and see if there's an association or not.
Thanks, Dr. Grundy. And then one other thing to note from the last slide, which is pausing the Johnson & Johnson while we, CDC and the FDA do this case review. San Miguel County, we are switching all of our Johnson & Johnson clinics to offer Moderna as an alternative vaccine. It's a different vaccine. It's an mRNA vaccine, and we're highly confident and have no concerns with this one. And so we have a couple clinics this week that have shifted that option, and we've reached out to all that have been registered. Next, or tomorrow as well, with the Moderna clinic, we're hosting one at Telluride Intermediate School Gym. If folks have had trouble registering for a vaccine or are ready for it right now, we are accepting walk-ins. I'm not quite sure about the time, but I think it's 11 to 3, I want to say. Walk-ins are accepted if you're able to return for your second dose 4 weeks from now. Next slide. Okay, and so as we're moving forward, we know that vaccinations truly are that key path forward, and we highly recommend people to continue getting vaccinated as they are able to. What do those numbers mean for us in San Miguel County? Our adult population is a little over 6,500 people, and our total population is estimated to be about 8,100-ish people. And so to date, we've had over 3,300 people be fully vaccinated in the county. And that means they've either received one dose of the Johnson or Janssen & Janssen vaccine, or two doses from the Moderna or Pfizer series. On top of that, there's about 1,500 people who are partially vaccinated, meaning they've received one dose of the two-dose series, and we expect them to return for their second dose within the correct time frame. So with all those numbers combined, there's about 4,892 people who will be potentially fully vaccinated by mid-May, which is quite spectacular and shows a really high uptake within our county for this vaccine. And so what does that mean by numbers, and what's the significance? By mid-May, that means approximately 75% of our adult population could be vaccinated, and that translates to about 60% of our total population to be vaccinated, which is really something that we should pause, acknowledge, and celebrate. Next slide. And so I think I'll tag team with Dr. Grundy here with herd immunity. Herd immunity is really how can we have enough people with immunity. And so when the virus is present in one person, it doesn't spread easily to others. And for COVID-19, it's really hard to track that exact number of people who need immunity in order to have that population level protection. But we estimate it's somewhere between 60 to 90% of the population. And so we're really getting close to this higher level of protection. Dr. Grundy, do you have anything to add to that?
Nope, that's correct. So I think, as we see this kind of our local adult population increasing, we're kind of protecting ourselves within the community because you're just your rates of contact go down. However, who in our community still remains unvaccinated are, of course, children. And Grace, you and I were talking about this afternoon, kind of there's probably a fourth of our population is under the age of 18. That what we came up with. And so we have to remember this population, or under 16. So this population is not being vaccinated. And I think over this next month, the group that we need to kind of make sure that we're also including, because right now Pfizer is approved for age 16 and above. And what I'm seeing right now is I'm not actually in the state of Colorado right now, is that we need to be looking at, as I travel with my child, I feel safer because my husband and I are fully vaccinated as we go about our travels. But I have to remind myself that my 12-year-old child is not vaccinated. So he needs to remain in a pod. And so I think as we get more data on the vaccines and as they have, Pfizer especially has already submitted to try to approve, I think it's either age 12 or 13 and above. But right now they're approved 16 and above. We will probably reach out as school comes back to the three different school districts to see if we can do a Pfizer campaign for that age group. Because that's part of our herd right there. We as adults are protecting them, but we can kind of continue to add on a layer. The other variable also is that we have a lot of visitors coming. So we have visitors from all over the country, all over the world, and there might be different statuses of immunity. So we may be protected, but they may have an issue as they come here. So we will just have to kind of follow along and see how we do with that. But those are incredible numbers, Grace, to look at that prior slide of how the population of San Miguel County has stepped up to the plate to get vaccinated and how our team at the public health and the two medical centers have done such an amazing job of making this available. It's absolutely incredible.
I agree. I'm really proud of our community as a whole for stepping up exactly and getting the vaccine when they were eligible. There was a question in the chat about those numbers from the last slide, which what we said was, I think 75% of San Miguel County residents have received at least one dose. And that data is coming from the state, which pulls anybody who's received a vaccine across the state that is a San Miguel County resident. This doesn't include people who received the vaccine within our county, but live in neighboring counties. So we know that there's more to be interplayed, right, with how much of our communities are intertwined. But there's a lot of folks who've come from workplace eligibility that's been vaccinated within San Miguel County as well. Okay. And so this is a nice little clip art here of us on a path heading towards the horizon. and so we really, the end is in sight. And we are really moving forward towards a closer path to normalcy. But what does this look like for the future? And it's still very hard to have a clear moment where we know when this pandemic will be over. We will not have a specific date, right, where everybody can say, we did it, we're done, but it will be a slow edge back into this sense of normalcy. And so we're really projecting that this summer we're gonna be well positioned to have safe activities and interactions. And then we're going to be cautious heading into the fall and winter, knowing that there's some level of seasonality within with this virus and really watching and waiting there. But some key factors too to really hitting that herd immunity point of that 60 to 90% are a few different factors. And the top ones really are what's going on with the variants and how prevalent do they become? At this time, the most prevalent ones, the B.1.1.7 and the B.1.4.7 or CA.1.4.7, those two seem to have protection through vaccines, which is great. And so we'll want to keep an eye on how does this virus mutate. Additionally, we're looking at what do the logistics look like for vaccine rollout, not only within Colorado, but across the state and across the globe, knowing that what Dr. Grundy says is so true, that we're all interconnected and we have tons of visitors coming here that can affect our safety as well. How long does the immunity last, both with natural infection from the virus as well as the vaccine? That information will continue to evolve. How will vaccines roll out for children under 16 years old? And then what does our individual behavior shift as we feel more comfortable, as we have these added layers of protection, and what those added pieces could positively or negatively impact our response? Okay. And so really, as we move forward, we need to be proactive with our five commitments. We need to continue to wear masks, practice 6-foot distancing with people outside of our household if we don't know if they're vaccinated or not, stay home when you're feeling sick, get a test. And really, as we move into this warmer weather, if we hang out in small groups to gather outside, that's a key element to our success over the next few months. Next slide. And so for the current future right now, our county is sitting in level blue of the state dial framework. This has certain capacity restrictions for various places that have higher levels of risk. But really the intent of it is wearing masks while indoors, having 6-foot distancing with people outside of your pods, and having that individual responsibility. Our public health order is carrying through this level blue capacity expectations through April 30th. At that time, we'll reassess where we're at and next steps as we have more folks vaccinated, as we get a better sense of our trajectory. We really do caution and ask people to continue to keep it up and really put forth that best piece to protect those that are still vulnerable and haven't been protected with this immunity from vaccines. And that's my last slide. Dr. Grundy, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think, again, we've done an excellent job in the county, and we will continue to learn more and more about this virus, about the vaccines response, and hopefully we can continue to bring visitors to our region safely. And but we, as you kind of, I think, inferred, we need to be prepared to always change course if we need to. So monitoring and staying aware of what situations are developing. But for right now, I think we have a good trajectory forward, and we're doing a great job.
Great, thanks.
Awesome. Well, thank you both. That was very informative as always. I will stop sharing our screen now. And folks, thank you again for joining today. If you have questions or comments, you can raise your hand using the reactions button in the bottom of the Zoom situation. If you are on the phone, you can hit *9. Mr. Greg Craig, we will start with you. I will ask you to unmute now. Thank you.
A couple quick questions. I noticed that the positivity rate jumped pretty significantly today, but I'm wondering, is that just an artifact of the fact that we don't have school testing right now, and the state incorporates the school testing in calculating the positivity rate? And then my other question is, do you feel like we're getting vaccine uptake across sort of all segments of society in San Miguel County roughly fairly evenly, or are there areas that need work? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Greg. Those are great questions. So the first one, positivity rate. So our positivity rate bumped up a little bit. We've consistently had about one new case a day. which when we look at the wastewater numbers, at least on the east end, we've seen that there's been a significant amount of disease in the area, not an absurd amount, but enough to still be wary. And that hasn't really trended downward, but plateaued. And so I don't think that it's a surprise that we've been seeing a few more cases. I think folks have been getting tests a little bit more for different reasons, and we might be catching some asymptomatic spreaders. Statewide, though, we have seen an uptick of our positivity rate as well as our R-naught or reproduction number over the last week or so. And so it really has shifted from that downward trend to a plateau to now an upward tick. And they think that it really has a key piece to do with the variant being more transmissible and the fact that the B.1.1.7 is the more dominant strain as well as the California variant in our state at this time.
Just a reminder to people who are worried about the that B.1.1.7 variant, does look like the vaccines are working towards it, is what I've been reading. I think is the state kind of put that out.
Yes.
So it is, again, more of an important urge just to keep that push for vaccination so that we can keep those rates low in our county.
That's correct. Yep. And the state, too, there's been some areas that were hit really hard with some of these variants early on where they prioritized mass vaccine clinics specifically to address that need for immunity at a much quicker rate, which was, I think really does speak words about how effective it is for these strains.
Mm-hmm.
The second question was about equal distribution and uptake of the vaccine. I think we've had surprisingly high uptake across our county. We've had about 40 something folks from EGNAR who've been vaccinated, and they were really excited and just thrilled to be offered the vaccine options. And then we've worked with Dolores County to supplement folks that we missed after our EGNAR clinics. So that was really great. We've also had a really high uptake in Norwood. We did start with the population of 65 and above that had a tremendous uptake in Norwood, and it has started to taper off as we've gotten to the younger populations. And then same for the East End, Telluride, Mountain Village area. It's definitely has been a little bit harder outreach for our younger folks, but I've been surprised with how many people across all age groups, across all demographics, have really stepped up and gotten their vaccine.
Thank you. So a question came in, will the switch from J&J to Moderna for local vaccine clinics affect the supply and availability of vaccines?
That is a good question.
Great question.
So at this time, our county has had a really steady supply of Moderna vaccine, and both the Pfizer and Moderna manufacturing distribution has been growing and has been consistent over time. So it has not been an issue, and this does not change any of our future clinic plans based on the switch.
Thank you. And again, folks, if you have any questions, you can raise your hand through the reactions button, *9 on a phone, or you can raise your hand if your video chat's on and you have something to ask. Alternatively, you can drop one in the chat.
And I think Craig has his hand raised again. Is that a new hand raise?
Sorry, Greg, let me. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, I forgot one more question. Grace, could you talk a little bit about the dial transition and what's sort of envisioned on the dial transition to local control for San Miguel County as we move forward into May, or actually past, 4 days from now, I guess would be more accurate.
Yeah, of course. So the state is devolving state control of the dial, meaning the state will no longer be hosting that overarching public health order. but providing the guiding principles and guidance for various industries and the metrics starting this Friday, April 16th. In anticipation of this, they made this clear this was going to happen a few weeks ago. And so in anticipation of this, San Miguel County, we revised our public health order on April 5th to go through April 30th, just stating we will follow either state guidance or orders as our public health order. So regardless of the state devolving this Friday, we are maintaining into our current dial framework, which we're currently in level blue based off of state metrics until that ends. On April 21st will be the next Board of Health meeting where we'll discuss what does this look like moving forward into the month of May, into the month of June and onward. I would say overall, the intent of this switch was not for the state sentiment to say that we're out of the woods and these preventative measures don't matter anymore. It's far from that. But more, how can we, in this really good state, support our local agencies to have more targeted and appropriate policies for their specific area? And so the state truly is supporting us to move forward as appropriate with our COVID policies and preventative measures.
Thank you, Grace. And great question, Greg. Thank you. So another question on chat that came in, is there still a recommendation to self-isolate for about 5 days after travel? Grace, could you jump in to that conversation, especially as people start returning from spring break and off-season travel?
Sure. And then I may tag in Dr. Grundy here too, just to tag team it all. But the answer is it depends. For those that are fully vaccinated, right, and have no symptoms, it's not necessary to self-isolate upon return. However, I would say if folks do travel to higher risk areas or engage in really high risk activities, meaning you're interacting with a lot of people outside your normal pod, or you're with a bunch of sick people, to really take a moment and say, what are the risks? Who are you going to be interacting with when you return home? And what are ways that you can prevent any potential exposure to those folks? For people who are not fully vaccinated, so that's 2 weeks after the second dose or the first dose of the Johnson & Johnson, we do recommend staying home, monitoring for symptoms, and getting a test on somewhere between day five onward to make sure that you're not an asymptomatic spreader and can safely return back to mingling with folks.
And that's what I agree with, Grace. And again, I think this is hard, especially on families who are traveling right now with children who are unvaccinated. Just please be careful kind of how they're interacting. Most people who've gone outside of the country, you've got to get tested to come back in. So that's a nice little safety net there. But just be wary in any symptoms that develop, be cautious, stop, don't send the kid to school, don't go to work, go get tested when you get home.
Thank you both. All right, folks. If there aren't any other questions, I think the only other question I had that we received on Instagram today was actually very valid. And the question was, can people still get Johnson & Johnson if they opt in at this time? And I think the follow-up to that is a question regarding if Johnson & Johnson will return.
Yeah, that is a really great question.
So we don't.
Oh, go ahead, Dr. Grundy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know yet. So the CDC, my understanding today, asked us to pause, but each state decided whether or not they were going to offer it or not. Colorado, is my understanding, went ahead and said, let's pause and wait for this ACIP meeting for this panel to kind of review all the data and see if they change any recommendations, because possibly what they may say is something in the sense of like, hey, we're going to allow this to we recommend this moving forward with 65 and above, but not at a younger age, because that's who this trend is appearing. But we need to see if there's a cause and effect. Did the vaccine actually cause this effect to happen, this complication?
Yeah, and just to add to that as well, both the state and the FDA really feel like this is going to be a matter of days, not weeks, to do this case mm-hmm. study and review to provide better understanding if this is a significant concern. So if somebody, the best vaccine for you is the one that's available now, because that adds that protection currently. But if it is a concern for whatever reason or a preference, we should know hopefully soon what this looks like moving.
Thank you. So the answer to the overarching question is that no, Johnson & Johnson is not available across the state of Colorado at this time. And thank you both for that follow-up and that deep dive. Folks, if there aren't any other questions, I think we will wrap a little bit early this evening. But if you do have questions, if something wakes you up at night, please don't hesitate to email us at publichealth@sanmiguelcountyco.gov, or you can slide into our DMs anytime. We follow those pretty closely. But thank you everyone for joining us this evening. If you, again, have any other questions or concerns, please don't hesitate to reach out anytime. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you. Thank you.